Welcome to Unknown Artist. I'm your host, Nikki E. Taylor, and you're listening to Episode 9 with Frisco Lee.
Thanks for coming. I like to start off with a song. Do you want to start off with a song?
Yeah, I'd love to.
Yeah.
That's usually what people tell me when they meet me.
We don't want anything until you play music.
I've heard you sing. Can you do that before I tell you how I'm doing today? Yeah.
Or maybe like as I tell you things, you could be singing me things.
Well, the two-in-one, yeah.
The old two-in-one. Yeah, they just want to be serenaded all the time.
I hear you. I do, too. Yeah, I can play the whole song. I think I wrote this one around this time of the year.
Nice.
Nice, sunny, walking through the park.
Nice.
With the sun shining on your face kind of song. In the old blues tradition that I love so very much. Well, you already heard this one just before, but I'll play it again for...
Please do. Said that this was, nice, happy walk in the sunshine, and I agree. It definitely sounds like that. But I was listening to some of those lyrics.
Yeah, there's always an element of sadness.
What was that about?
That's a good question. It's like, it's just one of those weird, it started with a melody, which I always find is like the easiest way for me to write songs, just like this happy-go-lucky, summertime obviously always gets these beautiful, sweet, like nonsensical melodies in my head. And then, I don't know, I just had this image of like this like beautiful, innocent memory. The kinds that you get a lot in the summertime, and then like comes the fall and you start thinking like, oh, you get nostalgic, you know, a little bit, or like melancholy. And like, you never know, it's like the golden days until the golden days are over kind of thing. So it's kind of like this, in the moment awareness that, oh my god, this isn't gonna last forever kind of thing. And that's pretty powerful, because I guess that gets you into action sometimes to really appreciate and like take the time and like appreciate the moment. I just don't like it's gonna sound weird, I don't like songs that are too happy. I think there's like, that speaks volumes about who I am as a person, but there's something about the balance of the two that really is like a little satirical, maybe.
Yeah.
And I really like that. I think that's a interesting, it's kind of funny. It's like it's a funny thing where you're like, oh wow, this is like a little sad, but set to this really pretty sunshiny thing. Because it's cool, because like you said, if you listen to the lyrics, you realize like it's not all sunshine and flowers. But it's fun to just, like, dance to and have a band behind it.
Yeah.
You know, it can be one of those, like, laissez-faire, ha-ha-ha, you know, kind of songs. But all of the happy songs are right, have to have some kind of sadness to it.
Yeah, that's why I always liked Lily Allen. Like, her music is so upbeat and dancey and fun, and then you, like, listen to the lyrics and you're like, ha!
For sure.
That's not what I thought it would be.
Yeah. And it's just
a fun mental trick.
It really is. But, I mean, at a certain point, like, down when you look at it, the bottom line is really just that, I guess, this is the kind of music people like singing to, but they still need to vent or like, you know, like expel some.
The badness still exists.
Yeah, the cathartic nature of like writing music as a songwriter. Like it needs to come out, and at a certain point, just like, I'm not going to write another sad melody for the sad song, you know. I'm going to do it in a happy song and kind of like sneak
diversify.
It in there. Diversify, yeah. And yeah. I mean, I started out with the blues, and that's, you know, the blues is not necessarily, like, sad music. It's just a means, like, a vehicle to kind of, like, let it all out, you know? And, like, people would play the blues at, like, gatherings and, like, parties and stuff, you know, when it started. It was just, like, a music that was, it could be jolly, it could be very sad, but it's the groove of it is just pleasing to the body, you know? And then you could just say whatever and...
Yeah.
Yeah. And you could be listening to the words, or you don't have to listen to the words, and there's different layers of it, I guess, the more you pour into it.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah, and I guess the music kind of catches you, you know, like you're getting all your the bad stuff out, but because of the melody and the way that it sounds, it's not so bad.
It's not so bad. It's easy. It's like it's a less bitter pill to swallow.
Yeah.
You know, it's like a sugar-coated pill, like a Flintstone, by the way.
I loved those. Right? When I
love those too. I went to the pharmacy the other day and I saw they're still making them.
Oh, like still the chalky ones?
Yeah,
like...
the chalky ones, and the packages are huge though.
Okay.
They were a lot smaller when I was a kid.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I guess they're just, you know, they gotta up the drug dosage, even though it's not really even medicinal. You look on the back and they're listing all these like...
It's mostly vitamin C.
It's mostly vitamin C, but then I was remembering how like sugary it was, and it was basically just like a big placebo, right? And then you look at the non-medicinal ingredients, which is off in the corner, it's fine print, and just high concentrate sucrose and like all this
candy.
It's basically candy, yeah. It's vitamin C candy.
But it's candy that fooled my parents into giving it to me.
Oh yeah. Well, I think at a certain point the parents were fooling us into thinking that we were fooling them. They were like, you know,
layers of trickery.
Yeah, they probably pretended to not know the non-beneficiary qualities of it. And they were like, you know, take your vitamins, and you were like, ha ha ha, like this is candy, and they were like, ha ha ha, we know, but at least you're happy. We don't care, you know. Because if you knew that it was candy.
It's all just really elaborate tricks with children. And as a child with adults.
Yeah.
Always being tricked.
Yeah, I like to be really honest to kids when I meet them now.
Yeah, me too. I find it's the way people raise kids any time. I was going to say these days, but I think it's getting better these days. Is like, you know, we start off by telling them lies about, like, I don't know, Santa Claus and like various things about the way the world works, and we don't tell them the reality of the situation oftentimes. I mean, obviously there are some really great parents out there that do, and they're really great, and they know when to tell their kids what.
It's about timing.
Yeah, it is about timing, because you need to make sure they're ready. But you also don't want to be, like, flat out lying with them.
No. You have to maintain the lie a little bit, just long enough. I
feel like it's more about revealing truth in the right time.
In the right time, yeah.
And concealing things.
Lying for the fruit. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a lie of omission, really. It's yeah.
Yeah. I can't remember being told when Santa Claus wasn't real. I think I figured it out before they told me. So yeah. It was going on too long. And from that point, I just didn't trust him ever.
How old do you think you were?
I think 6. Maybe. I think
you
it all changed when I started playing Pokemon. I think it was when I started developing the critical
thinking. You started playing Pokemon at 6?
Yeah, 6 or 7. I got a Game Boy. The first ever Game Boy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I was like, how? I remember this happening in like grade 5, and I thought you were older than me. But that
five.
Was when it was like cards.
Yeah, I was into the cards after the game. Yeah, we banned, my principal banned Pokemon cards at our school. And then it was Dragon Ball comic books. I don't know if you remember that.
I do, Dragon Ball Z.
Yeah, that was a huge thing.
Yeah. I remember Lazy Bones only really because I specifically didn't
crazy
like
bones?
Late.
Lazy Bones?
Maybe Crazy Bones.
You'd, like, knock them into each other. You know the Pogs?
Yeah!
Yeah. So, like, all these things, like you, were, like, a huge hit in my elementary school, but my principal thought it was distracting, and so he kept banning all these things one after another. It was, like, a three-year, like, full-on ban assault on, like, the kids. And then finally it just wasn't working because you couldn't keep up with all the fads.
Well, there's so many when you're a kid.
Yeah.
And, like, I think that is just integral to that part of your life.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So what happened next really shocked me. He decided he banned congregations of 5 students or more in the playground because he knew we would be up to something that would, like,
He knew you were going to overthrow the school.
Yeah, obviously. We were planning the full overthrow of the bourgeois elite who were controlling us.
Hells yeah.
I learned a lot from that one interaction. It's like, yeah, screw the man, screw the system. They're trying to stop the joy from just turning into a full on like political. This isn't even about the music anymore.
Do you have a screw the man song? A song that you could use to rally the troops? Ever be called upon?
Yeah. That's a good question. I think so. I guess it depends on how you look, like what angle you look at the song. I have like a social commentary kind of don't be fooled by the fame and love yourself and having, you know, try to not have other people kind of put you down, which I guess ties in very well to criticism of the government with its, like, propagation of ideas and standards in our society and that kind of contribute to a lot of, like, I don't know, our misunderstanding of, like, self-worth and that. So I guess that song in particular I would use, but It Makes No Difference. Which is a song I wrote last year, which is a nice message, courtesy of RuPaul Charles.
Yes, queen.
But I guess not like an overtly political screw the man song.
Okay.
I haven't gotten there yet.
Working up to it.
Yeah. I'm very firm on my stance of, like, my political stance and how I view authority, which is flexible at times, but I don't like finger-pointing songs so much. Like, I find it hard to put myself in a state of mind where I feel guilty about certain things that I could say.
Mm-hmm.
And, because there's so many different angles to, like, view one situation that if you put it down in the song, you might just, like, keep it there because it's, like, it's catchy or it rhymes or it's, like, ha, what a message. And then, you know,
You might regret it,
or something like that, you know, or be like, that's not how I feel about that, and that's a misrepresentation for me, so, I don't know, I feel like if ever I get beaten up by a cop, I'm definitely gonna have some words and, like, a song to write about that, and it's going to be brutal. I've had
as
that.
As brutal as the beating.
As brutal as, well, maybe not, who knows. My guitar is not a truncheon, but I haven't tried yet. This machine kills fascists. I don't know. I know a lot of people who have had really horrible, horrible run-ins with overzealous use of force by police and all these little fun games that they decide to play with, you know, left-veering people.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I also, it's not something that I could write about as honestly as they could, perhaps. I don't know.
Also, it's so complicated. It's hard to get it down to 3.5 minutes ish.
Yep. 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 It's like. I guess I was like 15 or 16 when I really started realizing my anti-establishment capacities and this rage that was inside me. So it's been, you know, it's been like, how do you condense like 14 years of like critical thinking and observing everything that's happened in the world and even just like around me in like a song that would, I don't know, maybe I just haven't gotten there yet.
Yeah.
Maybe I should listen to more John Lennon. He seems to, I'm more on the Paul McCartney side of from writing songs. There's a lot of fluff, and it's a lot about the music, and John's a lot more getting down to the nitty gritty of it and like had a message, you know. I haven't gotten there yet. I think my messages are vague and like in dreams.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. Yeah, I do actually find a lot of inspiration in dreams for music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They just leave such a big impression on you.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And I don't know about you, but I have, like, really vivid dreams.
Mm-hmm. Like, well, I smoke a lot of pot, so I... I don't have as vivid dreams as others do. Mm-hmm. When I find, when I smoke less, I definitely... Or if I've had, like, a traumatic day, there's no stopping intense dreams... When you've had a traumatic day.
This is true.
Yeah.
This is true.
What kind of dreams do you... Are the most vivid dreams, like terrifying dreams?
Not necessarily. I mean, like, they're kind of terrifying when I try to, like, in my awake mind, explain them. Like, the other night I had a dream where I was, like, scooping out brains. But, like... but they weren't, like, you know, like, squishy guts. Like, it was just like, oh, pop. You know, like, just kind of like, out, done, here you go.
How did you feel when you were scooping the brains?
Have you done it before? No, it was just like this thing I had to do.
There's just this thing you had to do, you know. Some guy's paying me to scoop these brains.
They had to, like, get taken out of someone's brain, someone's head, and then, like, I had to, like, put them back or something, and they just, like, kept falling out after that.
Oh. Yeah. So you gotta connect the wires when you put the brain back to stop it from falling out. Dream logic, man.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it was my first brain surgery, so...
I mean, I hope it turned out well. Isn't it so weird how, like, dreams, like, I guess, in real time last so much longer than, than they actually feel in... Do you ever go back, like, do you wake up in the morning from, like a serious dream and then... want to, like, go back to sleep immediately just to get back into the dream?
All the time. It never works.
It never works?
Well, I can get, like, a little bit back into it.
Slim chance of success.
Very slim chance of success, and never to the degree of success that I want.
And doesn't that just keep making you want to go back to sleep and keep trying to tap into it? You're like, oh, that time didn't work. Send me down again, doctor. You know, like, yeah. I love that. Yeah. That's probably the main reason why I sleep in.
Yeah, if really I could just sleep all the time, though. I could sleep an easy, like, 12 hours a day.
Like, oh, really?
Like, if I... Just for the dreams. Not because I need to sleep that much. I don't. But if I... And
it's
oftentimes
a little,
I...
a little bit excessive.
Yeah. But, like, I like dreaming. It's really fun.
Absolutely,
if I could... If that could be, like, a hobby, I would do it.
I know people who... We're very adamant about their dreams and we can edit that out, right?
No.
And keep logs of their dreams.
I used to.
Yeah.
I used to. And I found that helped me remember them and remember them more clearly and vividly.
Yeah.
Definitely does help. And I did get to a point where I've had a couple lucid dreams.
Oh, yeah.
Only a couple. I'm not very good at being like, tonight I will lucidly dream, but it's been pretty cool.
That is a fascinating experience. Mm-hmm. Have you ever seen the movie Waking Life?
Yes.
That's one of my favorite movies. Like,
it's
later,
so good.
And then when he tells you if you really want to know if you're in a lucid dream or something, go and switch a light on and off, and like if you try and look at the time. so it's going to be distorted.
Okay. Yeah. Do you do that in your dreams?
I do that in my dreams. I try and out-dream my dreams.
Dream harder.
I do. I find myself very much like, I know I'm in a dream. It's almost like I've gotten used to the fact that like things are ever so slightly distorted. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, haha. Like, I figured this out really quickly. Now let's see what I can do. But usually those kinds of dreams where I realize it's a dream, it's like I have, like, I'm on a mission. Like, I have to escape from something. Oh. Yeah. Mm. They're usually, like, really weird, like Dawn of the Dead type scenarios. Where there's, like, an outbreak or something, and there's these, and there's these, like, creatures, and I either have to escape from, like, a house or, like, a city. Mm. And those dreams, like, I realize I'm dreaming, and I, like, try and push it to the boundaries. I like try and summon up like a witness.
Yeah, like, wow, use your dream superpowers.
Yeah, use my dream superpowers. Yeah, definitely the only dreams I seem to remember these days are the slightly horror movie esque.
Do you watch dreams. A lot of horror movies?
No, I play.
Did
I,
you?
I love horror movies. I love horror movies. Like, I love and hate them because my imagination is very vivid, and if I'm ever alone. And in my apartment, and it's nighttime, you know, if I've watched a horror movie in, like, in the week leading up to that, like, I will.
In the week?
Yeah, they leave a huge impression.
Yeah.
I always imagine, you know, something coming down the hallway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I always got real, too into movies that involve possession.
Ooh.
Or like paranormal activity.
That's one of my favorites. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I feel like I get myself kind of in that mindset way too easily.
Oh, absolutely. 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 Man, you can make weird horror movies out of my dreams. But they turn really surreal. And then there's dreams where, like, you know, I'll wake up in the morning and do that yesterday? Because they're just so, like, copy-paste of real life, you know?
You know, those kinds of dreams are actually more common among engineering students and, like, math students than in, like, arts kind of students. Mm.
Wow. Well,
I guess it depends on how into getting shit done you are that day.
I suppose so, yeah. Yeah, I guess if I'm dreaming about, like, really mundane stuff, it's because my brain is trying to tell me to, like, do those mundane things that you hate doing every day that I need you to do right now. And then you dream about it, and you're like, oh, did I do that? And then you're
like, damn it. Yeah. I thought I got away with this one.
Yeah.
Well, do you have any, you want to play a dreamy song?
A dreamy song? I can do that. Sure. Sure. Mm-hmm. I had worked on an album with my friend Sam Harvey. Mm-hmm. Shout out to Sam Harvey. He is recording and producing my tunes at the moment.
Amazing.
Which I'm really excited to put out very soon. But we had gone up to his good friend. Has a studio out in the Eastern Townships, and has this beautiful country property, and they have a really, really nice studio there, and then there's a separate building, which is like the producer's wife's painting studio, which is a two-story thing, and then there's the house. So it's like a three-building property. And there's a trampoline in the middle of these three buildings, like, right out on the field. And we were recording some of, I think, Sam's material, or maybe we were starting to do my own songs. And I was just so, so excited to be there. It's just such a beautiful environment, and, like, you take your time, and you do nothing but make music for hours and hours and hours. And I was sitting there. It was the morning, it was like the second morning, and I was having a hard time figuring out like certain melodies or like chord changes. like write stuff out. And then I had this great idea to go jump on the trampoline, which was the producer's kid's trampoline, but she wasn't home. Or when she was home, she and I would both jump on the trampoline. But it was just me on this trampoline, and I would just jump. And for some reason, just this action of jumping and the gravity and the heart bouncing up and down your chest and the adrenaline going, and you just like start thinking faster. And I finished writing 3 songs on that trampoline in like
amazing.
Half a day. And it's so funny because
is this a trampoline song you're going to play?
This is one of the trampoline songs that I'm going to play. It's not a very happy song. It was conceived from a very happy place. It's just me just spewing out this weird dreamlike wisdom or what I think is wisdom. Some of it doesn't even make sense. And I just like really pretty chords, but it just so happens that the prettiest chords I like are like minor chords and very like dark, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But that trampoline definitely.
Smoking, running out of steam. Empty days and have your way in a thousand different schemes. And everybody knows they've lost the plot. Convinced of what it was, and now it's not. Take to the stage and earn your way.
I could ask some good dreams to that.
Thanks. Yeah, it's kind of one of those creepy lullabies, you know.
I love those.
Yeah,
great.
Me too. Me too. I don't know, something about certain chords just inspire, I guess, certain stories and words.
Mm-hmm.
I'm definitely one of those who likes to come up with chords and then put words to it. half the time not even know what kind of story I'm writing.
Yeah, just come out with whatever comes out, and then you attach to things that, you know, speak to you.
Definitely. I just, very much a stream of consciousness. I hardly ever go back and, like, edit stuff. Just kind of, it all kind of comes out in this one state of mind. It's just kind of like a painting that I painted, and I'm like, okay, great.
Yeah. Do you find it comes quickly, or do you find sometimes you'll, like, be like, I got the first two phrases, and that's great.
I do a little bit of both. There's definitely certain songs that come a lot easier. Like when I used to write blues songs, I would have a melody that popped up in my head, and I would just, that was it. Like, I'd just go and write the whole song.
Mm-hmm.
Very classic type structures. You know, not really much going there, but you can kind of tell a little story. There's a little bit of humor in there.
Mm-hmm.
And then with other songs, it's like, oh, wow, I really want to say something with this. And then you start out with, you got your chords, and that inspires the words. And then I'll write two lines and be like, I'm stumped. Like, I never know what I'm about to write until it's over. And then one day I'll just have those chords running through my mind and just start mumbling lines.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm more of the, I like my songs and my writing to have like a rhythmic structure to like the words, and the rhymes are very important and the rhythm of them are very important. Sometimes just the color of the word is really important, and it's not necessarily about like telling a story, you know. I've never been quite good at that, but those are the songs that don't come to me instantly.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll think about them for a while, and then sometimes I'll piece two songs together and change the words up a little bit, you know, just to make it fit. But then once, like, the song is written, I hardly ever go back to it. It's just like, that's it.
I'm done now.
Yeah, I'm done. Yeah, you've caused me enough strife. I'll see you next week when I play you live. And that's usually, you know, in the songs, when I play them live, that's where I really edit, which is weird.
I'll
play them live, and some things stick and some things don't. I end up... If the song is too long live, I'll end up cutting a verse. And that's my form of edit, is just get rid of a whole idea. Because my verses are usually like, each verse is sort of a contained...
It's like an essay?
Yeah, exactly. It's like, it's like one theme. And like, I can't take out half the verse and like tack it onto something else, or like try and write a different ending to it, or change some words around. Like, that was a complete idea. If I need to cut the song down, I'm going to get rid of that whole idea. And not like try and morph it into something else, because I kind of... changes it entirely.
Yeah, do you find there's like a critical period where, like, if it changes within this time, then it's fine.
Yeah.
But if you've moved on from that time, you can't change it now.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, when I'm writing a song and I'm trying to make it fit, that's when I'll like micro manage the stuff. But then once I play it live, I'll just, like, literally just chop stuff out entirely. Just, like, this is too long. This is not radio-friendly. Or, like, people lost attention at line number 10. Let's take out 8 to 12. You know what I mean? And that's, like...
Can you tell that when people are, like... When your audience has lost their attention?
A little bit.
That's the thing. Gotta cut it out.
Yeah. Well, sometimes it's really just people are, you know, have things to do and, like, people to talk to. Like, if you're playing at a bar and... I don't know, I kind of feel it in the air. It could just be a me thing, I could be projecting. You know, like...
Could be.
Where I'm like, oh, I don't feel this verse right here, because...
Yeah.
You know, it could be a combination of the two. But I do feel that at times. I'm like, oh, every time I play this like little part, I need to change it around. You know, and I'll adjust chord structures a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But the words, I won't really change that much. Like I said, because it's the idea of the time and the place that I wrote it in.
Mm-hmm.
So the chords are very important to me, because that's like the music kind of carries the words, and so I need every chord to match up with a line in the song emotionally and like color wise.
Mm-hmm.
Like I and I do this. We do rehearsals with the band with Eric and Waleed Kevin, and Waleed at one time had suggested that we change the chord to one of the lines, or like had a little bit of another chord that we only use in a different part where there's different lines. And I remember being so stubborn about it and being like, we can't do that. That's not what color that is. Like, that makes sense because, you know, and I would try and explain it, and I could tell I was definitely coming at it from an angle of like, this is you know, protective of my baby.
This is my baby.
But that's also a thing that you have to learn when you're working with other people is I'm very open to ideas, but there's certain things that I guess are like integral to how you view a song that you're like, I can change this, but this particular thing, and that's usually chords for me. Mm. Like, because I really write the words with the rhythmic and chordal intention. Like, you got like a dark chord, and, like, I need something dark lyrically right there, you know? So I rewrite chords a lot. I edit that. And I can play you a song, actually, that, this is a funny story. I love telling this story. But, so I was up at that producer's, the studio, in the Eastern Townships, and the studio building itself has two floors. It's kind of like a barn shape.
Nice.
And so you got your main studios on the ground floor, and there's big windows in the front. And then there's a little mezzanine up at the top where they have like a bed.
Nice.
And everything. There's like a kitchenette in there. It's a dream come true.
It sounds like it.
I brighten up every time I think about this place. I think we're going back in August.
Nice.
I'm super stoked about that because it's beautiful in the summertime. Anyway, I digress. Sam, who I was working on my songs with there at that time, this is actually probably during the exact same time I had the trampoline cure my songwriter's block.
The old trampoline cure.
Yeah, you know, if you're ever on a trampoline and you don't know what to write, just jump on the trampoline a little bit, see what happens. And it was late at night, we'd been drinking, and was so excited by all of the gear that we had in the studio, so I just played guitar and just really riled up. Oh my god, this guitar. And Sam had been drinking as well, and he was getting a bit tired, so he decided to go to sleep, and it's about 4 in the morning at this point. I was still just like wired, I was like, ready to keep writing, you know? So I this melody and these words came into my head, and I didn't want to pick up a guitar because I was afraid that Sam would wake up and I would upset him, you know, if I started playing. So I sat at this table and I just wrote the words out, and in my head started arranging the chords as I thought they... You know, like, I couldn't
this makes sense.
Right? Like, this is the G, if I can... Does that have to be? Okay, and just, like, kind of write out the song like that. And I must have spent, like, 3-4 hours on it. Finally, Sam wakes up in the morning. How are you doing? And I was like, great. He picked up a guitar immediately. I said, you want to hear something I wrote? And he was like, sure. And I played him this song, and he was like, when did you write that? I said, well, you were sleeping. And it was perfect. All the chords made sense, and I couldn't believe it. I was astounded.
That's incredible.
Like, I have zero, you know, music theory.
There's no way I would do that.
I surprised myself. I really surprised myself, but... This is that song. And it's, Makes No Difference. But... I think we were talking earlier, but, valuing yourself and not getting too caught up and lost in people's expectations and fame, especially. It's a tricky one.
It is.
Not that I would know at this point.
Maybe you will soon.
Maybe. And this is one of those songs that when I would play live, I kind of realized this is too long. I think it was up at 6.5 minutes or something. And I just cut it entirely, just a whole verse. It's like, I'm happy. And that was the editing I did to that song after I wrote it that one night.
Nice.
That's it, yeah.
Simple.
I'll take the time to make things right. I can't afford to lose. You can't crack my spirit. Case of blues. stubborn at times. Can't afford to cry. I'm just telling myself to play my well. It's up and gone, dry. Yeah, maybe I'm not the one that I thought I had to be. It's a matter of time before you make up your mind. Oh, babe, it makes no difference. Don't you let them be the ones I beg to bring you down. Tell me now how in the hell, child, are you ever gonna love somebody else when you can't be love yourself? Yeah, I cut it too close to the wire again. Oh, my spaceship's gone down. Just like Major Tom, burned out at both ends. I guess he never. Nobody cares for the truth anymore. They'll just sell you some story that's too tall to fall. But when they claw at your collar for one lousy dollar, man, how far will you bend? I recommend step away from the ledge. Our pain makes no difference. Yes, how you do it. Well, don't you let them be the ones our pain to bring you down. Some fools get lucky, some just bite the dust. Baby, I think it's funny that there ain't much that you can trust. You have to do what you must. Baby, if you ever want to make it out, I said you better learn. You can outrun all your problems. Yeah, but there's no guarantee that you'll ever win. Just keep your chin up and grin, 'cause tomorrow's got no time for sorrows, my friend. Better take care of your garden. Don't forget where you've been. Yeah, babe, it makes no difference. How you doing? Well, don't you let them be the one. child, all you ever gonna love somebody else when you can't even love yourself?
Well, that's it for Frisco Lee. Tune in next week with Mars on the Harp on Unknown Artist.